You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 2nd, 2022, and it's date night.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Chester.
And I am no longer sick, George Abor. Well, kind of.
Just at a spiritual level.
Yeah, I'm at a 5 out of 10.
We're the co-creators of experiencepoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless show and podcast about video games. We got, I feel like we have the two ends of the spectrum today.
That's a very good assessment. Yes.
There's two topics we could talk about. We could talk about how I finished. Well, finished is a strong word. I saw the credits within the calendar year of Elden Ring.
You did it. Congratulations. It is October 25th. It took you 7 months, but you made it.
Slow but steady. And within the calendar year, we have both received play dates.
Wild. When did we back this thing? Like 3 years ago, I want to say?
2020, I believe, was the invoice or was like the receipt date or whatever. Like I checked it in my email.
Okay, so a couple years.
Yeah.
I have waited longer for game-related things. Okay, I will be vague about it. But thanks to the glory that is Kickstarter, I have waited several years for projects that never came to fruition. I'm pretty sure that there are some still in production that I backed before I backed the playdate. So
the fact that we're holding it in our hands is, you know, is a good sign. You know, it worked. We did it.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about playdate first, Elden Ring?
I mean, up to you. What do you feel like we should start with here?
Well, let's start with playdate because I have it in front of me and I got it charged in.
Me too.
It's so funny because, you know, when we first like pre-ordered this, right? Uh-huh. What was the sell? It's like, oh, here's a weird little device. It's got a fucking crank on it. It plays indie games.
Yep.
And it's like a boutique handheld gaming thing that is kind of a callback to an era where you couldn't download anything you wanted whenever you wanted on your little device.
Yeah.
You needed, this thing isn't backlit. You need to be in a well-lit room and, you know.
One of those like snake lights that you used to have to plug in. Remember those things?
Yeah, there's no Joy-Cons, you know, like it's a simple device. I think we got what we paid for, Scott.
I think so too. I mean, it's also interesting that they're metering out the games. So we've each have, what, 4 games available now?
So it's what's interesting is they meter the games out based upon when you receive and connect your account.
Your activation time.
I currently have 6 games.
Oh, nice. Because you got yours a week or whatever before I did.
I'm in the future. And I can tell you right now, the future's looking good, Scott. The next 2 games. Nice. So the games I currently have, I'll just go through them. Casual Birder.
Yeah.
Whitewater Wipeout.
Mm.
I can't read it in the menu. It's like something Time Adventure. What is it?
Oh, yeah. Cranky, I think.
Cranken Presents Time Travel Cranken Adventure. Cranken
Prevents, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then what else we got? We got Boogie Loops.
Boogie Loops, yeah.
And then
that's all I have so far. Right. So, yeah. So what are the other two you have?
So I got Lost Your Marbles and Pick Pack Pup.
Okay.
So
2 strong names, I'll say. I'm looking forward to them just based off of the titles alone.
So, you know, you've played some of these games. You played Casual Birder. I got to say, I actually really like Casual Birder. I think it's super funny.
Yes.
Quirky little indie game where it's almost like, what would you describe it? It feels like a Pokemon game in a way. But
I was just going to say, it's kind of an event. It's kind of like a text or an old school adventure game, but with a Pokemon Snap element.
Yeah, like the Pokemon Snap element where you're taking pictures of birds or pictures of other objects in the world to show them and solve puzzles.
Yeah.
And the humor feels just very on point for like our generation, you know, making jokes about like expensive coffee and getting that Joe, or like there's a weird guy behind a building that will trade you your shoes so the game doesn't make squeaky noises, which is just like kind of a weird kind of thing.
It's also funny that that guy, that one of the running jokes is your the protagonist character. The art style is very much like a Pokemon game, kind of a chibi style top down view. There's multiple jokes throughout the game of like, oh, you can't have this. This is alcohol. You're too young. Or it's like, oh, you'll figure this out when you grow up. And the guy is always like, I'm 35.
Yeah. Yeah. Too real, dude. Too real.
I liked Casual Birder, though. I mean, I like a good adventure game every once in a while. And it was very much like, I mean, there's literal, you have to find a crank to turn the wheel to shine the thing on the thing that will then let you pick it up. Like, it's a very classic adventure game in some ways.
I think it's the perfect game to start off whatever this seasonality thing is for the playdate, because it doesn't use the crank as a gimmick.
Yeah.
Nor does it overly rely on the crank. Like, the crank is useful and you use it to focus your camera and stuff.
But
the differentiating factor of the playdate, by and large, is the crank. But there is a D-pad, and there is a B and an A button.
Yep.
Right? And we've played hundreds of games with those buttons as the sole inputs. We've played games with only one button as the input that are still stellar games, right? So the crank is entirely unnecessary. And I think my concern going into this was the crank would be too much of a gimmick. And I think, to be fair, it is in some cases, I'm sure. Yeah. But I like that they're setting the right tone with Casual Birder, and that this is a fun, clever, cute little adventure game that is great on the tiny little handheld device that you're playing while you're waiting for your allergy shots, if you're me. and it doesn't overstay its welcome. I think it's super cute.
I'm glad that they put that game out in the first batch as well, because it shows that I expected most of these games to be kind of like WarioWare games.
Yes.
Yeah. And there are certainly those already, but it's also kind of cool to be like, oh, like you can have a different, you don't have to, everything doesn't have to be like an arcade style experience. Like, you can have a different style game.
Yes.
And
yeah,
it fits well. And I mean, yeah, like overall, I'm just from a mechanical perspective, I think the device itself is very pleasant. You know, like the construction of it feels nice. And
I mean, it's not ergodynamic in the slightest, but
no, I mean, it's nice, a little block, you know, like it's just a little, gosh, it's small. I don't even know what the right, you know, it's like a credit card size thing, you know? I mean, it's, but the fit and finish of it is nice. And like, it seems of high quality for what it is. And the kind of the aesthetics of it are very nice.
Yeah. It's a nice, like, calming yellow mustard color.
You know? Yeah. And I actually ended up getting the official case for it.
Oh, did you?
And the case is this, like, purple dealie that on the back, you know those, like, the metal grommets that hold the whole thing together?
Yes.
There's little, in the case, there's little metal pegs that go into the back of those grommets, and then there's magnets in them that they like stick onto it, so it's like very
interesting.
It feels very flush, like when you put it in.
I should get one, but I might have to wait 15 years before I get to use it, so
yeah. And it's purple, so like they do the yellow and purple thing, so like it's just everything seems shoot, what's the hardware team behind this? They do other kind of
Panic?
Boutique gaming. That's the software. Like, that's the publisher. I think Teenage Dream is the
I see.
The people that do the actual hardware on it. And they've done other devices kind of like this. I think they've done a couple kind of like hardware emulation systems, you know, like the NES or, you know, Game Boy hardware emulation. And it's all very nice looking. And so I think that's like very similar to their other projects. The other games, I very much expected it to are more what I expected. Although the Krankens Time Adventure is enraging, but actually I think makes a very good use of the crank.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because it's very analog. Like you're turning the crank, and this little robot dude is going either back in time or forward in time, and you control the time frame with your crank. But the enemies exist out of that time loop, and so, you know, the enemies will continue to travel across the screen, and so you have to go forward or backwards in time so that he's like bending over to smell a flower so that the enemy goes above you, or like he's jumping over a rock and so you're jumping over the enemy that's also moving. Like it's kind of like a braid like implementation in a way. Yeah,
it's half puzzle, half dexterity game. And I don't know how far you got. I think I got to date 9 when I was like, this is too hard. Like you literally have to crank so fast in order to overcome some of those levels.
So I looked it up. They pushed an update. You should check your system updates. They patched it so that the pigs move slower.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that I got past that one. I think that was 8 or 7 with the pigs.
Yes. And so there was another one where like the pigs are just going ham. And I was
no pun intended.
Pun intended. And I was like, what is this thing? Like, is this game bugged? Is it broken? And so I started looking online. And they were saying,
and they were just like, fucking crank faster, you noob.
Like, honestly. And I finally got to like a Reddit of like a subreddit for Playdate games. And they were like, some people were like, I'm afraid I'm going to break this thing. Like, yes, I'm cranking so hard that like this thing is going to snap. And so they eventually patched in to like rebalance some of the enemy speed and stuff.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's a cool one. I do think that the mechanic is really neat. I don't know if I'll try playing it again and see if I can see credits.
I really want to know how many there are because I've gotten to like, gosh, I don't even know, like 19 or something like that, and like it's still.
Oh damn!
I'm on 17, date 17, and I don't know. I don't know how to finish this one. Actually, no, I do know. It's just annoying. Like, there's a pattern that I need to like figure out. But every time I finish one, I feel like this has to be the last one. And it's like, oh no, I know there's at least 5 more after this. You know?
Yeah. For sure. Of the other games, I would say the Pick Pack Pop is a match 3 game, but it uses the crank to navigate through the story. So rather than going by pages, you're kind of scrolling down the screen in real time as you loop it. But then it's just kind of like a normal match through game. And then Lost Your Marbles is another adventure game. But they're both super compelling. Boogie Loops was the one that was probably the least interesting to me because it's just like a music generating device and I'm not proficient at those.
Well, I also, I messed around with it a little bit and I was like, I don't know if this is the format for this. You know, it's like a very tiny screen. You know, you're navigating around with the pad. I don't know. There must be a gimmick that I'm not quite understanding yet, but I didn't quite catch on to that one.
Yeah, and the symbols are very small. I mean, what I will say is for the most part, with the exception being Boogie Loops, the screen is actually remarkably effective given its size at communicating art style and legibility of what you're doing. The audio from the device is surprisingly good as well from such a tiny little device. And we were talking about it not being backlit, but for the most part, even with just like a kind of mundane light on in your room, I find it pretty easy to see what's going on also.
Yep.
So it's just kind of surprising like where we're at these days in regards to how much you can fit in such a tiny, tiny little package, right? It feels really sharp.
It reminds me of like a fancy Kindle, you know, like the e-ink style.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's probably most exciting by it is that there is already a sort of community of developers for the Playdate. So I don't know if you saw this, but you could download games directly to your Playdate.
That's what I want to do next. Yes. I haven't done it yet.
So Doom, someone made Doom playable on Playdate. On itch.io, which is a great source for indie games anyway, has a developer community for Playdate. And there's already some adventure games that are really well reviewed that I really want to give a shot. There's just a lot out there. And I know that the development tool for it is very easy to access, so anybody can go out and make a game for the Playdate and have it be super, you know, quick to download. And you know, these games are transferable. It's very easy for you to, you know, play this on PC or something. It's not going to be the fidelity that you'd get in a Steam game, but for something that is, you know, very much leaning into that nostalgia of a different era, I hope that there is continued interest in developing for it because I think it makes for such a fun little device for experiencing those boutique titles. My concern would be in the long run the crank will push people away because there's not a one-to-one you know aspect to it. But for now I think the future is bright and I think it's super cool that you can play a lot of things on there. I would say for me I don't want to download any of those games on it until I sort of experience what this year's offerings have to offer for the Playdate. I like the idea of like because they you know, when you get an update, you get a little notice that's like new games, mm-hmm. and you press the button and you unwrap them, and there's this cute like animation as you unwrap your new games. And I kind of yes. like the idea of trying something new every week, you know, getting a new sort of something in the mail, essentially.
Yeah, there's kind of a everything, it's an event every week where it's like, oh, here's some new games that I have.
Even yeah, though, like, let's see what it has to like offer arbitrary. For sure.
Yeah.
I don't think I would ever use the clock that it has on the playdate to like
set it aside. You're not gonna make this a watch, like just put the whole thing on your wrist.
Yeah, I guess you could have bought. They had the extender, right? That turns it into like an audio device.
Oh wait, what? What is this?
There's a dock you can buy that the playdate attaches to that is also a stand, so it could work a little bit more functional as a clock, I suppose, if your room is well lit. But I think it's largely designed to play music out of it, like a beatbox or something.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
It's just like a quirky little thing. I like it. It seems very much like this was made because people really wanted to make it. You know, yes, like a passion project, and it shows through.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, should we talk about my passion project?
Yes, we go. Elden Ring. Okay, so we talked about it. We did like three debriefs or something on Elden Ring.
I feel like we only did one because we were like, we'll talk about it later, and then we just really? I never finished it.
Well, I think we did like an early check-in, and then we did like a review. I thought we did.
Maybe
we okay, did. Maybe not.
Maybe
yeah.
No. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
Because I had finished it, and you'd still made like a good chunk of progress.
Yes.
Okay, well, first off, what took you so long? Like, what was the challenge? Besides normal life, was there like a particular boss or element to it? And then what were your thoughts in those last, you know, few hours?
I think, the true boss of Elden Ring is having a family.
That's true, yep.
Because
this,
it's just...
This year, man. Yeah, I feel like I'm finally getting it.
Yeah. And I think because I think those games are best played in chunks, you know, those games just aren't. It's hard to play those games in 30 to 60 minute increments. It's like it just really rewards multi-hour chunks if you can swing it. And it's really rare when I can swing it. And so it just took a long time. And it was funny. I wish I had screenshotted it better, but when I beat it, I was at level 149 with 149 hours.
So 1 hour per level.
Yeah, exactly. I was like,
149 hours? That's incredible. I think that's more than I clocked in.
Well, I was doing a lot of like exploration, and like I really took my time in some of the like, you know.
Yeah.
Toward the end, I sped through it at the end. And I started looking things up at the end because I was like, oh, I'm interested in this quest line, but like I maybe have done two steps of it a month ago and I've surely forgotten all of it by now. So I just need to like retrack where I'm at and then I need to go over there and stuff. So I had to speed up a little bit.
Cause I was at 100 hours.
Yeah. And I think, towards the end, I also put in just some more hours of just, grinding just for levels. Cause I realized I needed more, I switched over to the, man, what's it called? It's called like the Godskin Flayer or something like that.
Yeah.
It's the thing where the weapon art is a tornado of the Blackfire.
Yes. Yeah, it's a cool one.
Because I realized that was probably going to be the key to fighting, especially the last two bosses. Because the god class bosses are weak to that stuff, and so I had to kind of power level a little bit of that stuff to get to it, and so that took me a little bit longer. And I spent a long time on this I was under leveled when I got to the last boss, and so I realized that this is just like a hard level check, I feel like. And so I had to go and, you know, do some more things and then come back to it. I tried that last boss a lot. I spent dozens of tries on that last boss for sure.
It is remarkable how high level you are by the time you beat this game versus any of the previous Dark Souls games. Because I remember stopping at like, you know, beating Dark Souls 3 at what, like a 120 maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to have to go like 30 levels above that to feel like you've got it is pretty wild to me.
Yeah, what I mean, I know I should have just respec'd, but I was too stubborn to do it. But like, what were your I don't know, like, what was your level like when you were finishing the first, you know, the first run, not the new game plus or anything?
That's a great question. I'd have to load up Elden Ring to remember, to be honest. It wasn't especially high, because I tended to blast through it more than most people, because I'm just, you know, I'm comfortable with the Soulsborne series. So I think I was probably comparable to you, maybe maybe a little bit lower level. I had initially gone in using like a full strength build, which was just, apparently now it works better because they've done a lot of patches since then. But then I shifted to bleed, and that's ultimately how I wrapped up a game.
And I was strength for a long time, and still was strength, but I dumped a bunch of I dumped a bunch of points into dexterity and faith so I could like get the magic that I needed to beat the game.
Did you notice any changes when they released patches to your experience? Because some of them were significant during the duration of you playing.
I feel like there's, and maybe this is just like power of suggestion from reading things, but I think they did, they made some changes to like weapon speed, and maybe this is because of the speed, but especially with the huge weapons, there's now this like, there's now this like meta strategy of, like crouch poking and like roll poking, where like you roll and use your attack and they kind of just do a thrust forward with the big weapons. Mm-hmm. And because you're rolling, it's hard to take damage. And then you do a thrust straight out of the roll, which has a long reach, which is hard for a lot of enemies to handle. And so I think that stuff has changed it a little bit, but strength was a tough one. Like I definitely went strength for most of the game. And I feel like this was certainly a magic favoring game this time around.
I've started to replay Elden Ring as of this week, in fact. And I started playing with like Arcane and Faith in those early levels. And it's such an interesting beast to play that way rather than really focused on just being like a melee, tanky melee user. So I'm looking forward to replaying it. I mean, I don't know if I'll see through the whole thing again, certainly this year, because it is such a long game. And I guess I'm curious also, you know, when we were talking and debriefing about it, we talked about how, you know, some of our criticisms were that the open world was probably too big, to be honest. Some of the best content was like Souls, more like Souls dungeon style. I think both you and I were saying that we liked it, but it wasn't necessarily our favorite entry in the series, albeit, understanding and respecting that it is quote unquote more accessible, but you know, it lost some things in the exchange. Do you feel the same way, or did that change at all as you were playing?
I feel like, I'm kind of two minds of it. I mean, I think the open world is kind of a crazy accomplishment, because like one of the late things I did it late. I could have done it earlier in the game, but I did what's it called? It's called like the Magical City of Nokrun or something like that.
Yes,
like
it's the sort of night world.
Yes. That stuff is incredible. And it's incredible because it's just literally underneath the surface the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you kind of have like a game and a half in a weird way, where it's like, hey, here's the open world, and then here's all this like crazy stuff underneath the world that you're usually traversing. And I just love the sense of like mystery of like, oh, whoa, like there's a whole like underground lake in here, and like there's this huge waterway that connects all of the various continents, and you know, there's a huge city. Like all that stuff I think is very cool. I think the just finding stuff in the open world is one of the most kind of surprising open worlds. You know, you'll just find weird stuff, or like enemies will pop out of nowhere, or you'll see something that the remnants of a battle from thousands of years ago or whatever. Like all that stuff is just very cool. I do think that that element itself makes it even more prone to the general Soulsborne problem of the story is inscrutable and the quest lines are extremely hard to follow.
And they're so long. Like the time gaps between you encountering someone, seeing part two of their quest, seeing part three of their quest, if you've Googled it to figure out how to fucking do it, like it makes it doubly worse when there's so much time and physical distance between, you know, those locations and what you can make out of them. I mean, to that end, I thought the ending was kind of disappointing. I think that's been a criticism of the Souls series for a long time.
It's hard to end that kind of game.
Yeah, this one just felt, I don't know, more so to me in the sense that you're fast traveling all around the world. And so it didn't feel like I was coming to the culmination, right? The boss arena, the final boss arena that you're in, is directly connected. It's just up the stairs and down a hallway from a boss arena that you fight in significantly earlier in the game. Right. So it doesn't build like a, you know, crescendoing into that moment where you're entering the final area and learning more about the story. And then you get there and you fight the bosses and that's sort of that culmination, you know, you're kind of, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it. It's a capstone in the same way that I think some of the DS3 final boss felt like, or even Bloodborne to some extent, even though, you know, that takes place in the Hunter's Dream, it's still this like climactic moment of like, oh, you've done it. And now this thing. Oh, and then also if you did the bonus quest, here's another boss on top of that boss.
Like, yeah.
You know, there's a degree of being connected to the story there that I think was really interesting that I didn't get because maybe I just didn't dig as deep enough when I first played Elden Ring.
Well, I think there's also just, and again, this is kind of the victim of the scope and the size of the game, but I didn't even finish part of the world. Like I didn't do the Haggad Tree, you know, or whatever they call it.
That's a well-designed area, though, actually.
I did some of it, and, like, I really liked the area. Like, I was in a cave, and you could see, like, jellyfish beneath the icy surface of the cave. Like, all of that stuff was very cool. I just never finished that area, and so I kind of want to go back just to... and also, I hear that boss is, like, enragingly difficult, so I just kind of want to go and...
Yeah.
and see... and I thought the last boss was pretty annoying too. So like, I can only imagine like what this one is, but it's so large that it is easy to, you could very easily miss some iconic fights in this game. Yes,
absolutely.
Which is cool in a way because it's like, oh, they're so confident that like they're willing to let the player find it. I think I still really, really enjoyed the game. I do think, you know, we talk a lot about accessibility or whatever, but like, I do think they need to do something about the quest system. Because it's just kind of,
well, they even added the ability to see NPCs on the map after launch.
And even that though, the map is extremely difficult to read. I mean, like it's, there's just kind of menu navigability options that could be helpful. And lead you through all that, you know, like even the whole Rennie quest, like, which I think is an interesting quest, but there are whole pieces of that quest that I realized, oh shoot, I kind of did this out of order and now I can never talk to this character ever again, you know. Which is fine, and that's like the Souls deal, but in a game this big and this long, it seems like it would serve them well to make it a little bit clearer about like what is next in the quest map.
I think that's it, right? Is like some of the criticisms. So for example, missing an area, right? That was true in Dark Souls 3 as well, right? Like if you don't explore the untended graves, right? The optional area that's behind an optional boss.
Yeah.
Where you would fight Champion Gundyr, which is one of my favorite fights in the Soul series and one of the most like really cool, unsettling areas. But that's relatively small within the entire map of Dark Souls 3.
Right.
But then when you're talking about the scale of Elden Ring and you miss a whole area, that's a lot of interesting content that you could be missing out if you're just not aware of it. Same with the story and the quest lines, right? Because like, there are quest lines that I wanted to get more of, but I just didn't know how. Some of them weren't finished when the game was first played. The Ronnie questline is super cool. The questline where you can you get the mad ending with the weird finger and like that stuff is extremely convoluted and is really neat if you look into it. But yeah, it does require quite a bit of effort when you're looking at the scale of the game that it is now.
Yeah. And I guess maybe like I don't know, quick spoilers warning here, because I do want to talk about the ending, because I was kind of looking it up and it was divisive. The actual mechanics of the last boss, I feel like, were divisive. Like, some people were really kind of annoyed by it. Like, what was your, how did you feel when you were finishing it?
I really liked phase one. I thought it was a beautiful fight and it looked really cool. And the hitbox porn is just on point in that fight. Yeah. Like, and it does what the game has always been doing, right? Which is making you think that the enemy is going to hit faster than they do, but it just has extremely classic long windups. When you learn that fight and execute, it looks amazing because the backdrop is amazing. The boss is super cool. Like the, you know, bits of gold that spark up when they hit the ground, or you know, the chunk missing and you could see inside them. Like, that's a really cool fight. Phase two, I thought, was a little bit more frustrating because there's a lot of running over an expanse, trying to not get laser blasted to death in an one shot instance. And that's one of those fights where when you're up close, it's too easy. When you're far away, it's kind of painful and annoying. So I didn't think phase two was super elegant, even though I really liked phase one.
That was kind of my take as well. And I was also thinking about the whole like magic versus melee thing, where as I was like, especially that phase two, where this huge beast, you know, appears and then proceeds to go like a mile away from you. And you're like, well, fuck, I gotta run towards this guy to like, you know, like, and I'm like, if only I had that crazy, like, missile blast that I see people use. And when I call them in, you know, like, but I'm just here like an asshole with my staff, like needing to fight it, you know, hand to hand.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hope that we would get news of DLC soon, and I'm still optimistic that it's going to come up this fall. Like, they'll announce it and it'll be released in March. But thinking about the best Soulsborne content, like, the Ring City from Dark Souls 3 is superb. Yeah. The Old Hunters from Bloodborne is some of the best game content I've ever played. Like, I think they fucking kill it when it comes to their DLC. It's all so good. Yeah. The Painted World, like, it's good content. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps that, by definition, that DLC reins them in, right? Because they're making a discrete, smaller experience and mapping everything that they can that's true to their game to that thing. Yep. My guess is that the expansion is going to be big and they will have DLC. I'm sure of it.
Oh, yeah. Did they confirm it already? Like, I feel like it's
I don't think it's been confirmed. But you'd be crazy not to. Like, the game did so well, right? So when that DLC comes, not if, but when that DLC comes, I think it'll be really good. My only caution would be, how big is it going to be? Like, is it going to be a whole new map? Like, a whole new sort of mini open world to be connected? I imagine it would be. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm excited for it. Are you still stoked after playing? Or
I had my fill. Well, I think it's good that I have a little break now because I was just playing it for so long. But I think, to your point, the DLCs, because they tend to be... they tend to have a scope to them, you know, a more modest, you know, tight scope, which is good, I think. But they've demonstrated that, like, they've already set the precedent that they can do anything in this open world, because they could just be like, oh, look, we found another cavern underneath the world and it's immense. You know, like, they could just have a huge underground, you know, estate or whatever that you're going through, or screw it, you know, they'll go Bioshock Infinite with it and like warp you up into the sky or something. Like, they're not tied into whatever the map is anymore, so like, they could do anything. I wonder how they'll handle it from a story perspective, because one little annoyance that I had was, again, this is like spoilers for the end, but I burned the tree, after that, there's just constant embers floating around the world.
Yeah.
And it got tiresome to me. I was like, man, I really like the look of this game, but I kind of messed it up. And I was like, well, maybe that's the theme of the game. Like, I really just ruined the world. So, like,
I guess you have to burn the tree. Mad.
I didn't know if that was like a thing, like, if you do the other ending,
I think you have to burn it in order to like get in to the boss fight, you know?
Okay. I didn't know if you went down to that other area where like the madness cult was or whatever, like if that was an alternate way of doing it.
It is an alternate way of winning. I don't know when that happens, actually.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I spent so much of that game just kind of lamenting the fact that there was this huge burning tree in the background. And I was like, I wonder what they'll do with this, like in the DLC. Because like, is it, have I repaired it now that I'm the Elden Lord? Like, is it okay again? Or like, what is going on here? So I'll just be happy that my world isn't on fire anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. all right. Well, sweet. Elden Ring. I'm proud of you, Scott. You did it.
Yeah, exactly. Like all the world and everyone in it conspired against me. And yet I've completed the quest of the furled fingers.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there this week. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts. So do us a favor, leave us a review. Oh, you know what? One quick shout out before we end. There's a mod for Elden Ring called Seamless Co-op that lets you play co-op in the open world as much as you want.
Nice.
And it works wonderfully. It's a little bit buggy, but it works really well. Whether or not it's going to kill multiplayer, I reject. Maybe that's a conversation for the future. But if you're looking for a reason to get back into Elden Ring and you play on PC, consider that mod.
That's very cool that someone did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's also one of those things where it's like, well, you could have done this from day one, FromSoft.
I mean, that's not their grand vision. That's not how the furled finger works.
I want you to be alone. I don't want to have to worry about balancing open world enemies.
That's cool. I wonder if they'll do any more multiplayer stuff with the DLC. Like, it feels like they have so many players now. Yeah. Now would be the time to do something interesting.
That's a good point. Yeah, maybe it opens it up for them.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, as always, folks, we appreciate the listening, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.